Hello, and welcome to What a Jazz Podcast. I'm your host, Elza Wisniewskita, and today I am joined all the way from Paris, France, Alexia Leguex. In this conversation, Alexia shares her experience, values, and new approaches of leading a dance school and an all-women team. We also discuss the evolution of followers and following in the scene throughout the years that we've been part of the community, how her own personal approach to following changed. We talk about being able to connect with an element of playfulness, taking more risks, and initiating in the dance. Alexia also talks about combining family life and a dance career, trying to find the balance, and a word that I really loved in today's conversation, alignment. Finding alignment in what we do as dancers, as organizers, and community leaders. So without further ado, put your hands together for Alexia. The new studio of Shake That Swing. What's the updates?
It's like we're starting in the middle of the conversation. So that's the big news, big news. I've been looking for, I think it was 4 years, since 2019. And 2019, sorry, in English. And because we had a lot of venue issues that year, and we're like, okay, we need our own space. And finding a space in Paris, it was like, oh, it was like the Hercules work. It was super hard. But yeah, we found a great place. It's one room. It's one space to take care of. And it's going to open, I think, in May, because we have a little bit of works to do in it and adaptation to welcome the public, you know, with like the laws about, you know, the restrictions and so on. And then put a nice bouncy hardwood floor on for dancers. Mm-hmm. And a nice sound system and a nice acoustic, you know, so the sound doesn't go everywhere. And so it's nice to stay in for several hours.
Mm.
And that's a big step, because it's finally going to be our home and we're going to be able to organize pretty much whatever we want in it, like on the weekends and socials and maybe conferences or talks, movies, all of this. So it's going to be awesome.
And can you go back a little bit on how did this school start and how did it grow into what it is now?
I started it with Nawel and Sylvain, our friend back then, who helped us a lot. It was 10 years ago. Like this year, we're celebrating 10 years and we are opening the studio. So I think that's why the universe was waiting to let us find the space, you know, so it can be like a big anniversary thing. And at first it was an association, and then we built up the school the year after so the association still exists and organizes everything that is like parties, festivals, workshops, everything that's not weekly classes. And we have the weekly classes with the school. And I think it grew super fast. At first, we had like two nights and we were three or four people teaching. And then the year after, there was already like 15 hours of classes or something. So it went really fast. And then it grew, and now we have like something like 40 hours per week of class. And we are 18 teachers.
Wow.
Yeah, that's huge. And we still have some teachers that started with us.
Hmm.
Which is very cool. So some teachers have been with us for like 10 years now. But yeah, it's and the team, the admin team grew because at first it was mostly me and then Nawal was helping. And now we are like a team of women, 100% women at the admin and organization. And we have someone helping us with private events and the Instagram. She's doing a great job at it. So Hani is doing our Instagram. And we have Elena is writing for a blog. And we're going to have a new person at the admin. We're going to have our first employee, which is also like a big step for us. And she's going to do all of the admin and emailing and all of this. So yeah, it's quite new.
And having all women team, was that a conscious decision that you tried to do, or it just happened to be all women?
It wasn't always all women, but with time going, and at some point we started to only work with women as a coincidence. And we realized that we could talk about some topics, we could share in a what felt like a safe space. And also our consciousness grew. We evolved a lot. Like I've changed so much about this within the 10 years. And being surrounded by women who are very committed to feminism, and also, you know, by talking with them in the meetings, I was realizing a lot of things. And now I would say since like the past 4 years, we are consciously trying to work with women because we feel a little bit safer, like sharing, or we don't feel like gaslighted when we work between ourselves.
Mm.
And that's also actually what we're trying to do with events, or, you know, the people we are working, like if we have to hire someone, if we have a choice between a man and a woman, we're going to try to go with the woman.
Mm.
It's not always the case. Like sometimes we still work with men. Of course, we have nothing against working with men, but we're trying to give opportunities to women.
This has changed a lot. I remember, I mean, I guess before the Me Too and what, maybe 8-10 years ago, right? The voices of women and of followers were not as heard. And we had so many things that now sounds even crazy to think of the treatment as well. And kind of the first place for leader and how much power men had. And that has changed a lot. Do you think that was also the moment it started shifting in the studio and with your school?
I don't know. I think it was very progressive because I remember, for example, when you've been there for that event I think it was 2015, the Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had created the event because back in the days we were feeling that the scene was very men-oriented. And because it wasn't gender neutral, it meant leader oriented. So that's why we created that event. And now that event is gone because we feel the scene doesn't need it anymore. Because, like you said, it evolved so much in a positive way. And it doesn't mean there is no lead and follows anymore, because that's very often the confusion, you know, like having a voice as a follower and then. I love the feeling of leading and following, and I absolutely don't question that. But there is a difference between leading and following and not dancing your movement. And I feel that now we also, when we give more power to followers, we actually give also more power to leaders, because we want them to dance more instead of just focusing on leading. And it's the same for followers. So I have the feeling it's empowering literally everybody and giving, more, maybe a little bit more responsibility to followers, and then less mental responsibility of the dance to leaders, and it gives them more space to actually enjoy, have fun, play, have that, you know, dance conversation that we keep on talking about. So, but yeah, to go back to your question, it's true. It's probably related. I'm really happy where the scene is going about this. It goes with everything else, obviously, but I have a feeling it's the consciousness is being raised and people are starting to question the way they do things. And yeah, really, like at events or even during the social weekly events, but also the festivals and everything. And yeah, but it's not necessarily something. It's not always activism. It is, but it's also, like I said, it's also good for everyone.
Mm.
I guess you can scratch this because activism is good for everyone. You know what I mean?
Mm. Have you, as a follower and as a woman, because you've been in the scene for quite a while, in other words, nicely experienced. have you personally, like, felt from festivals you worked in or partners or anything like this kind of, you know, follower being on a second line?
Yes, I still feel it, if I'm being honest. But I feel the change. But change takes a lot of time. And I have the chance to work with partners that are very conscious about this. And so, for example, when I work with Sepp, we talk about this a lot. And he's a true ally, I would say, because he's not afraid to question himself. We had tons of conversations about this along the years. And at first, he's a man in the society. So at first, he didn't understand some of the things and I was not able to phrase them well or properly as well. But now that we are trying to understand how it works and everything, he's also working really hard in that direction. But for example, what I see, and I don't know if you have that experience as well, but even if we have a strong voice, I believe, in the dance and in our dance ideas, for example, it's very more common that the organizers would reach the leaders, and sometimes they would say, "We want you, and who do you want to come with?" And sometimes the event would say, "Can you come with Alexia?" But they wouldn't write me. And then, you know, my partners would transfer me the message or in this little things, you know, I see, okay, we're still not there. You know, I don't know if you're experiencing.
Yeah. I think less and less, but yeah, there's definitely, sure. I mean, there's once someone wrote me and Peter on our Facebook page where it's both of our names.
Yes.
And they addressed Peter and asked him to come to their event with another partner. I was like, I can read the messages, at least have the decency to, like, you know, go privately.
That's not tactful. That's funny though.
Yeah, I was like, wow.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, you still see it when the students, they would talk about, instead of talking about a partnership, or they refer to a video or a couple, but they only name the leader. And this happens less and less. When I started traveling and teaching, it was in 2009-10. It was a whole different story. And I mean, the path we've been on since, it's crazy. The scene have grown so much in that direction. I'm so happy about it. But back in the days, it was very much the leader was in power and the follower was also responsible of the mistakes, if there were any. But yeah, like the there was a dance style back in the days in Europe. And I remember Michael Seguin. I don't know if you know him. He's you know, having like how do you say, directing Mobtown Ballroom. And I will always remember this because he called that style of dancing "bitch on a leash." It really, it's quite, it describes pretty well how it felt back in the days, you know. And it was so stressful for followers because we had this weight on being perfect in the following, and there was no question of self-expression, individuality. So it was so different.
Yeah. And also I remember dancing with some leads. Many of them are no longer around, but it always felt like you're on a test, like they're testing you, they're doing things, and then they're checking out how can you follow that? And then they're like, okay, yeah, you can follow this. What about this? Yes. It's always like an exam, you know?
You feel like a PlayStation. You know, when they're like trying combos,
yeah,
of moves and see how it works. Yeah, it still happens a little bit, I feel. And also I'm trying to, when students are trying this in class, I'm trying to discourage them to practice this way, because followers need also time to put the movement in their bodies. So if you're already trying, can you do A, B, or C without me telling you first, then followers cannot learn how to dance A or B, let alone C. You know what I mean? So
yeah. How do you find the balance when teaching between technique and connection, let's say, and some aspects that are making the leading and following work, and the expression, and not letting it go to one extreme completely, where we just have kind of like a ghost connection, but then it's not what we talked about before, an extreme form of leading and following.
Okay, so for me, something really changed after COVID, if I'm being honest. I remember very specifically when, it's actually weird when now that I think about it, before, I used to have to mentally think about those things when I was dancing. And sometimes it would take me away from the pleasure of social dance because it would put me in my head. And I remember after COVID, so for me, it was after COVID and after pregnancy. So this is an important, I think, an important thing to mention, because I think it changed things in my body and the way I moved. I don't know why. I don't know how. Just know it happened. And I had this practice with Sep. First time we see each other after the big lockdown. And then we do this practice. And we didn't think about anything technical or nothing. We just danced. And then in my mind, something shifted. And I stopped being afraid of recognizing the moves. For example, I was like, okay, this is a swing out. I recognize the swing out and I'm going to dance a swing out. Instead of being, okay, I don't know what's going to happen in the next two beats. So my body kind of stays in that I'm ready for anything, you know. And instead I was purposely dancing something. So I was a bit more committed. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I started to dance in that way where I was like, okay, I think I know what's coming, and then I'm going to dance it out. And funny enough, I don't think it makes it harder to lead something unexpected, but it makes my body so much more committed. Like, I move myself way more than before, where I was more waiting, you know, like being a good follower. And I feel now it's easier when I think about the dance this way. It's easier for me to dance the movement the way I want and the way I feel at the moment, which means it's still going to be a tuck turn, it's still going to be a circle, but I'm going to express it a little bit differently every time. And maybe it makes me a less, I want to say a reactive follower. I don't know. But even if it does, I think I don't care. Because I take much more pleasure in the dance since then. Like being more in the moment, I feel. I don't know if that resonates with you.
That does, for sure. I've been watching some West Coast Swing videos, and I have not done much West Coast Swing, and I don't know if I will, but it seems that there, like the approach to following and leading is, like at least from the videos I see, is that there's a lot of commitment from a follower to kind of like recognize what's happening, go for it, and then when the plan changes, react, but also take a lot of risks.
Yes.
And it's like, I see that, and I'm hoping that, I guess, like Lindy Hop can also get into that balance, you know, where we really commit, but it's still like leading and following, and we're doing this together.
I 100% agree with what you just said. So last year, when there was still the in France, there was still half a lockdown, and we were in this workshop in Lyon, and the parties were forbidden. Somehow the West Coast Swing parties were still happening. So we are at this, we're done, you know, with our duties at the event. And then Alice and Remy are like, oh yeah, we're going to this West Coast Swing party. Do you want to join? And with Sepp, we're like, well, it's 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. And, you know, it seemed quite spontaneous. So we're like, okay, it's not far. Let's go. We had classes at 10 a.m. the following day. And so we go to Remy's car. First of all, they start to open the trunk and change their clothes. So I was like, okay, that's not spontaneous. Like, you planned this. And so Steph and I were still dressed as, like, you know, swing kind of things. So Steph has this, like, suit and hat, and I have my vintage dress. And, like, Remy and Elise change in, like, super West Coast style, like, more modern. And we feel like, okay, like we're going to look really out of place there. And then we enter the car, and I remember Remy going, like, he puts the GPS on, and then he's like, okay, so it's only 30 minutes away. And I'm like, I have class tomorrow at 10. What did I just do? So that's Remy, you know, he's like really into after parties. I don't know how he does it, but he doesn't need to sleep much, I feel. And so we go to this party, and we had so much fun. Because we were trying to understand what they were doing and trying to reproduce. And what I felt was exactly what you said, like the followers, they commit so much into their own movement and they're not afraid to change the plan. And the leaders, they deal with it. You know, so it's, I binge watched a lot of West Coast Swing videos after that party because I was super inspired by the dance conversation that was happening in front of me. That was quite cool. Yeah, I completely agree. But also, if I may add, I was very inspired by what you did in Strasbourg. And I heard you or read that you were talking a lot about playing the dance, and I really saw that focus when you did that social demo. And I actually felt the same when I watched you. I was like, wow, she's not afraid to play and to suggest things that could be dangerous for the if we talk about perfect leading and following, but if you forget about you if you look more for imperfection and you value that sort of imperfection that actually creates moments. I really like the dance you had, you and Peter, in Strasbourg this year.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think that word play for me, that was like the last of the last 2-3 years. And actually a lot of like CVFC talks. And I think Marie was the first time I heard like these values kind of repeatedly again, and play came up. And I think I knew all the other ones before, but play was somehow kind of like forgotten for me. And then when I read that again, I was like, okay, I love this. This is why I am in this dance, for this play element. So how can I kind of bring it back? And I think, yeah, it just makes it so much more enjoyable. Because others, like when you think, okay, improvise, it can have so much weight. And how do you improvise? And what do you say? But play in the idea of it, it's like light and it's joyful. So that word gave me a lot of ideas. Where do I want to go with the dance as well?
And it's funny how we forget that playing is the best way to learn.
Mm.
And I think it's important with STEP, we try to keep the play element in class. Like, people have to find the playfulness in order to explore in a nice way. It's like, you know, with kids, we always think about these moments where they can play. But as grown-ups, we forget about it and we remove the playfulness in our daily lives. And that's a pity.
Mm.
We learn so much better in a playful environment.
Yeah, it's that idea that you, like, it has to be serious and difficult if you want to learn something.
Yeah.
And only very few people function like that. I think most of the people function better when they're relaxed and they're not stressed and insecure in a class, when they can just, yeah, play.
Yeah. And it's like the improvisation, you know, it's like learning how to improvise or teaching how to improvise. And I don't think you can say teaching how to improvise, but let's say facilitate, you know, an environment for students where we can improvise. It's something that we've been thinking a lot. How do you give a good environment where people are secure enough to explore?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been also a journey as teachers. We try not to use the word teachers anymore, even. And it's strange. It's like, you know so much better than the students. Instead of, if you want to teach individuality, it's more facilitating. The word facilitate is the word that we use a lot now, and mm-hmm. create an environment where they can explore and find their own voice. It's really hard to get out of the traditional teaching pattern, you know, for mm-hmm. us, like showing, oh, this is how you do this. Of course, there is a little bit of that. But also, how can you find your way to do it? And, you know, I was talking about this with people. I think sometimes when we want to teach individuality, we make the mistake of doing exactly like we used to do. And then we add this little phrase at the end of the class, this is how I do it, but of course you can do it differently. But if you don't give the opportunity to people to try to do it differently mm-hmm. or find themselves a way to do it differently, then it's kind of a missed opportunity as far as facilitating the class goes.
Do you see enough individuality nowadays? Let's say in a coming up dancers and new people in the scene?
I want to say yes. I think yes, I see a lot of great things among the students. I see a lot of change in the way people teach at workshops. And now we almost the other way around. It's almost nobody teaches vocabulary in workshops and everybody teaches concepts. I don't know if it's good or bad. I have no idea. But I feel the if you are at a party, I feel a lot of expression on the floor. And I want to quote, Tydrick, he came for the first time in Paris last year. And he said he had expectations on how the French and European scene would be. And he was surprised to see how much expression was on the dance floor. So I was glad with that remark, because he didn't know the European scene back then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I feel we're on the good path on this. I'm really happy with the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think in festivals, a lot of times now we went to the all the concepts. But I guess it's like a transition. We're finding how to not over explain things. And maybe through concepts, there's more space to do that. And hopefully we can, I guess, find the balance between vocabulary or some vocabulary. Because sometimes, like, I was talking to a friend who's been dancing for a while and he was taking classes in one of the festivals. And I was like, well, who did you like? And he mentioned one couple. And he said, I liked their class because they were the only ones that gave me like something, some specific, like a move or a variation, because everything else was like connecting to music and your partner. And he's like, I've been dancing in these parties on live music for, you know, like many hours listening to live music. Like, I feel like I can connect pretty well with this. Like, I just don't know what to do with it. You know, like, I don't know how to move. That's
Yeah. So
there's also that, where sometimes you do need some specific things.
I think there's a balance to find, and our scene right now, we've been shaken, you know, after COVID, and we're trying to find our way through it. So we're trying things, we're going through extremes. I think it's perfectly normal. I've been teaching recently a local class with a friend of mine, and he goes, he bluntly told me, he's like, you know, right now I feel like only teaching vocabulary because I feel that's what the scene needs. And I'm like, fair enough. And also, let's be honest, it's fun. It's fun sometimes to just teach vocabulary, and it puts movement in your body that you might not be used with or used to.
Yeah.
Used to. Sorry for the bad English. And I like it sometimes. But if you were only doing that, then maybe you would come back to the beach on a leash format, you know, or a way of dancing. I think it's, we just need a bit of everything.
Yeah. How do you work with your team? Because having a big team is also a challenge. How do you make sure you're all on the same page, teaching-wise and values-wise, I guess?
Well, it's not easy because some of us, we are full-time. Some of us, we are only teaching like 2-3 hours a week. But with most of the team, we've been working for quite a long time now. We have meetings every month, like pedagogy meetings, and we talk about how we teach, but we also talk about the values, or we talk about what to listen to, like a podcast. So, for example, I recommended your your podcast with Felipe. And I'm not saying this just because it's you doing the podcast today, but I really like that episode. I thought it was very insightful. Mm. And I don't know, you know, I recommend, we talk about the CBFC stuff. We talk about also just sometimes, you know, like documentaries that are enlightening about music or about racism, about, yeah, a lot of things. Like we also raise a lot of difficult topics within the team, and I'm very, very thankful that they are welcoming these topics. For example, we talk about the dynamics between men and women in the partnerships. So we talk about how we share responsibility. Like, you know, you're in class, we have a little bit of admin, for example. Now, since COVID, we note the who's there and who's not there among the students. Mm. You have, like, you know, you shoot a recap, and then you have to upload that recap somewhere so we can give it to students afterwards. You know, these kind of things. And I noticed it was very often the women taking care of this. And so we talked about it. I was like, well, we need to share that responsibility. Or if we don't share that responsibility, it's okay. But then the person who's doing it maybe needs to make a little bit more money because it's more work. So we addressed that that topic for the last, I would say, 2 or 3 years. And I really feel a change in the way the men of the team are committed to some stuff, some tasks, or, you know, like, yeah, I really feel a change. I'm really grateful that they are ready to also hear, because it's not easy to question yourself on this on these topics. And I feel also the team is like questioning themselves on the history of the dance, but not only the history, the culture, because history, culture is two different things. I mean, they're connected, but knowing your history, I would say, isn't enough nowadays to truly understand the dance we're doing. So they're also really making efforts to change the teaching, because we made big changes. Like, I would say the changes started maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it got more intense since 2020. But yeah, I asked them, for example, things like, we don't count. We count the music sometimes, but we don't count the dance. Or being in a more organic approach, like you said, explain less. Or showing a lot and challenging the students before explaining, challenging the students into trying to reproduce. Like you would do, you know, when you take a street dance class, very often there is no talking. You know, you watch, you reproduce, and you take whatever you can get. And I feel in the mini hop community, we are very much like, okay, we're going to explain you the steps, And it's a challenge, you know, when we are international instructors and it's our livelihood, of course, we're super committed to make those changes. But when you teach 2 or 3 hours a day and you have a regular job on the side, it takes some commitment to change those things when you only teach sometimes. So once again, I'm super grateful that people were on board with this. But also that's how we choose who we work with. Like I work with people who are willing to do that introspection or taking the journey, you know, to change the way we teach.
Yeah, it almost feels for me as it's like a chain, because there's like some change happening. And then personally, you're going through this journey of how do you want to change your teaching, your approach. And then if you have a team, you're trying to pass that and spark that knowledge in discussions with the team. And if there's any resistance, for me, like I recognize so much, because I might have had the same resistance.
Exactly. Yeah.
Maybe half a year before or a year before, or like at some point in my journey. So when I listen to questions, or yeah, sometimes people just resist any new ideas because we don't really like change. And then it's almost easier for me to see myself in the questions that the team asks. I can really relate and understand that. I know why. Yes. Why you don't want to maybe change your attitude or your habits. It's hard. It takes time, you know?
But at the same time, it's what I'm trying to tell them also is try it out. And then we can again talk about it, if it worked or not. Because, for example, when I started to say, hey, can we stop counting? And people were like, oh, but what did they ask us? And I said, you know, it's like if you never had TV in your house and you grew up without TV, then you're not asking for a TV program or TV later in your life because you're not used to it. And so the changes we made, you can see it's so much easier with the beginners because they don't have habits. But changing the teaching with the more advanced, it takes time, especially when you don't want to be super specific as a choice of teaching, you know, because it relates to the self-expression and the individuality and the less focusing on pure leading and following. And then it you encounter resistance also with the students sometimes. And I completely understand, because the habits Their habits of the were different, even if they were with us before, or if they come from other teachers. Like you say, I completely relate. I know it takes time.
Mm.
It takes some explaining also to do, you know, like explaining the students why you are trying this out and the value behind it.
Mm.
And just asking them to be patient. Like now, we always go, okay, we show you. You watch 3 times and then you try. And now they're like, sure. Like they don't mind. And they know that if they need more explanation, the explanations will come.
Yeah. And how did your events change, like after COVID now and Lindalicious being back? And yeah, what are the things that you've experimented with?
Yeah, that's a good question. I knew that question was coming. So I was thinking a little bit ahead, you know, I was like, how did it change? First of all, the date changed. that was not our will. And because of this, and I hope it's the only year it's going to happen, but because of this, we had like 6 or 7 months to organize the event, because we knew about the date only in October, and it's in May. So I was like, okay, let's go. We're trying to, I would say the main word for us is be aligned. And it's really difficult to be aligned, and it's not perfect, far from it. But we're trying to question the way we used to do things. Try to question the format. And so we changed this year the format. So there is Lindy Hop classes, but there is connected dances. You know, Latasha Barnes, she has this great term. She has the name Jazz Continuum, which I think is the perfect term to describe it, but that's her words. We got also inspired by experience. So now we not only have the like tap and house, but we have also teachers from our scene teaching these classes with the house dancers or tap dancers. So we can connect in the class, for example, the tight relations between house and jazz flow, or the relations between hip hop and jazz, and the relations between tap and solo jazz, how you can really get inspired from one into the dance we practice every day. So we wanted to be a bit more explicit.
Mm.
Instead of last year we had house classes and tap classes, but this year we want to make it a bit more obvious why we do this. You know, it's always about the why, the golden circle, the what, the how, and the why.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to push this way to think in the other areas of the festival, which was tough because of the timing we had. It's very tempting to just redo what you did before, so you don't have to think about it too much.
Mm-hmm.
But we questioned, we were like, okay, what are the values that are important to us? And then these values, how do we translate it into actions? And this is always the challenge. But I'm happy with the results. For example, we changed the competition format. And that wasn't that easy to make those decisions, because, you know, the first thing you would like to say to do is like, okay, we do a Strictly and we do a mix and match and we do a solo jazz competition and that's it. But you're like, okay, why are we doing this? And what do we want to promote? And which value we want to promote? So we decided to keep the mix and match for the social aspect and accessible aspect. And instead of a Strictly, we decided to do a Ruler of the Hill format, which means it can be solo or couple. And everyone can enter. And it's a very spontaneous battle format. We got very inspired by Big City Blues for that in February. And you don't really know when it's going to happen either. Like the MC was deciding, which I really liked. Also, like depending on the energy. And then boom, it was like, okay, that's the moment. It's going to happen. And I really liked it. And we had also this, you know, with the volunteers, we had like, okay, which competition are we going to do? And some volunteers, they wanted to do a swing out competition. Because it's fun to watch. And I agree, it's very fun to watch. But then we were like, yes, but if we do a swing out competition, what are we going to value? It's going to be, again, the technique. Is that what we want in the event? So then we said, maybe instead we're going to do something else. Because if you do a swing out competition, what you judge is something that wasn't aligned with exactly what we wanted at the event. So it takes a lot of questioning all the time. And we're going to do a switch competition as well, because we think it's fun to promote also the gender neutrality of the dance, even if we are still at the beginning of the process. But it's just questioning everything that we were doing, from the lineup to the format of classes to having more social outdoor dancing, so it's free. Because the financial aspect and accessibility is always a big topic. I guess it's going to be a very different edition this year. Not only the date.
I think experimenting with the setup of festivals and competitions, I had a conversation with Maka and we were talking about exact same thing, how, you know, like copy paste of the same comps only pushes the same thing or the same way of dancing.
Exactly.
And the more different of competitions you can have, then other people can have a chance. People that have different strengths and different skills. I think the same recipe works kind of, but it's just the same all over every time, you know? So it's nice to see something. Yeah, that also you need to challenge yourself as a dancer rather than just, I'm going to put 16 eights for my Strictly.
Yes, which is challenging also, but in another way, like, yeah, I feel also it's nice to think about it this way, because every organizer is different and has a different set of values. Some are common to the scene, but some are very different. And then if every organizer is questioning themselves, as in, let's not just redo what we did in the past years or what the previous organizers were doing. Let's really translate what we believe in into actions and into something specific at our festival. Then all of the events are going to be different. And it's going to add a lot of, can you say richness? Is that a word? You know, you're not less going to feel like, okay, you're doing kind of the same festival as a participant over and over.
Yeah, just in a different city.
Yeah, sometimes it could feel like this, or I hear this from people, and you know what changes is just like the maybe the people attending, and so the people you're going to social dance with. For example, I have in mind this in France, there is this festival in Poitiers, a smaller city in France. And the organizers are also actors and working in theater. And so you can really feel it at their events, because they do this crazy stuff or crazy competitions. I remember, I think it was 2016, and they were doing this eyes closed competition. And I laughed so hard, because at some point in the finals, I think it was a mix and match nowadays, back in the days it was still called Jack and Jill. And you know, in the finals, at some point they say, okay, it's dangerous, let's be honest. So you think, okay, they're going to open their eyes now. But no, they just gave each couple a volunteer to take care of the space around them. And so everyone was still dancing with their eyes closed, but I had a volunteer taking care of the space. It was so funny. It was hilarious. And it was very specific to them because they're theater people.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that was so amazing. So yeah, I wish, you know, there was this thing. Okay, if everyone is trying to put more of themselves or what they believe in their festival, in the lineup, in the way they do the way they organize the classes, the topics, the band they select, I feel like it's going to be a very unique experience every time.
Mm.
And I'm not saying a lot of people do it, but I feel sometimes the organizers are sometimes just like, you know, reproducing. Mm-hmm. As we were tempted also to do with Lindy Dishes, let's be honest. Like, it's super tempting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also wanted to ask, because you mentioned a little bit about it, how some things in your dancing even changed after you became a mother.
Yes.
How is the balance of building this thing, you know, your school in Paris and family life, traveling and family life?
It's unbalanced. It's very tough, if I'm being honest. Okay, I have the school to handle. I have the mom life, and I have the organizing events life, and I have the international traveling. And it's a lot to combine. I don't think I'm doing a great job at it yet. I think all of my friends will tell you I'm a little bit all over the place. It's hard sometimes to find myself centered. But sometimes I'm more centered than others and I can enjoy every part. But sometimes everything feels like a mess and I'm not enjoying any of the parts. I have the chance to have my how would you say in English, not boyfriend because it's not my, but I'm it's not partner? My husband partner mm-hmm. It's a partner. So I have my partner who's like babysitting when I'm away for whole weekends and also at nights during the week. So he's really willing to do this, which allows me to keep this job. But it's a little bit hard because it's hard to leave also my family. And then when you come back, you know, on Monday morning, you have to wake up super early and like go with the mom life and like take care of the kid that you haven't seen since Friday. And all you want to do is crash because of the weekend that just happened.
Mm.
It's a hard balance. I'm trying to bring him, like, for example, when we organize things, I'm trying to spend some time with him and organize at the same time. So I bring him with me and he just loves watching people dance.
Mm.
So last time it happened, he was dancing also on the side. And then, you know, the teachers asked the students to gather. And then he asked, oh, can I go as well? And I was like, yeah, he was speaking a little bit loudly. I was like, no, you can't. That would have been cute though. And yeah, I remember at the beginning of the year, we had guest teachers and it was the beginning of the year. So I came to like explain a few things to the students, etc. And then he was with me in the backpack because I also had to babysit. And then I explain and then I stop talking and super loud, he goes, can we go now? Like, yes, okay, we can leave. And then as we leave, he goes, we will come back, right? And I'm like, but you just wanted to leave and now you know, they change their mind all the time.
Mm.
So, it was funny, but it's, yeah, sometimes he wants to stay. Sometimes he wants to, like, Yeah, it's always quite unpredictable.
Mm.
But I'm trying to involve him as much as I can in the dancing life. Mm. And now he says, "Oh, when I grow up, I want to learn how to dance." He said that the other day.
Oh, little so, Lindy Hopper.
Yes, we'll see. I'm not gonna force it, but and I haven't brought him at an event yet. At the parties, he came at Big City Blues, but he was there during the day. But he's too little to stay up late, so I still can't like bringing a little bit at the parties. At least I haven't tried.
Yeah, has your focus changed on things that you found, I don't know, very important before, and now after you have a kid, did that change?
I want to say not that much, in the sense that I love the Lindy Hop community and the job so much that I'm not necessarily spending less time. I just have less time for myself because all of the free time is with the family now or taking care of him. And I mean, don't get me wrong, it gives so much pleasure, you know, to spend some time with them. It's just that when you're tired, it's a little bit difficult to enjoy it at times.
Mm.
So I think it didn't really change the way I work or the way I see the dance, except what we talked about, you know, but I don't know if it's related to him or not, but being more in the moment, that definitely changed. And yeah, it changed the playfulness thing. Because sometimes I see him and I, you know, when you see young kids and they're so spontaneous and then you're like, how do we lose this? You know, when we grow up. So sometimes I'm trying to be inspired by his careless attitude because I think kids are super inspiring from that perspective.
Yeah. And I think we're still so lucky as we're in a community that gives us a chance to still be quite playful and spontaneous compared to many other hobbies or lifestyles people choose to have.
Yeah, it's finding your inner kid, you know? And yeah. For example, I have a dance partner that is a grown-up and a kid at the same time.
Hello to Sepp.
Hello. And the joke is like very often, you know, at workshops, I'm like, I tell people, I was like, I feel like I'm babysitting as a joke because he would run somewhere and like hang himself to stuff in the ceiling or jump all around.
Yeah.
And I love that within him, you know, because, well, also he has the body to do it. You know, he doesn't have like the pains or the joints and the stuff. But he's so in touch with his inner child.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's super inspiring.
For sure.
Like I when I hang out with him, I'm like, okay, like I want to do that as well. And that's how he's like one of my kids' favorite uncles.
Oh, of course, of course.
Yeah. My kid loves him.
Yeah. So. To round this off, I have a rapid question session. You can answer it in one word or maybe one sentence max, but kind of like a short one. So I have three questions. The first question is, what's the best dance advice that you've received or heard?
I have to pick in between two advices. Advice, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I would say once Naomi, she said in a class, don't cheat on the one with the two, which means don't rush things and fell in love with the beat you're on. The beat you're dancing, and don't cheat that beat with the by thinking already about the following one.
Nice.
I like the way she put it.
Mm-hmm. What's the worst dance advice you've heard or received?
Followers, wait. It's the worst. So it's like instead of telling you to do something, it's telling you not to do something. But you're like, yeah, but what do I do instead? You know what I mean? I hate the followers. You have to wait.
Agree. And third question, how do you define success?
Alignment.
Ooh, that's such a good word. Alignment.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is what I'm looking for at the moment. Alignment. It means there's no, you know, true or right or wrong. There's only what sits right with you. And aligning your actions with what you believe in, whatever it is you believe in. I love that. I'm not completely aligned yet, but when I'm researching for alignment, I feel I'm more at peace.
Yeah.
Whatever the outcome is.
Yeah. It's beautiful. And it's also a long process, or a lifelong process probably, to constantly realign things with new input and new things that change in life.
And the things are always going to change. So it's never achieved. It's a journey. But I feel when you are trying to tend with alignment, you are, you know, it's like you're at peace with whatever comes out of it, because there are so many things that don't depend on you. But at least if you can be aligned with whatever depends on you, your behavior, what you did, or then whatever happens, I mean, you're doing your best.
Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. I think that's a perfect ending for the episode in such an aligned, calm way.
I think so too.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Vic, thank you for allowing the space for me to share. I feel super honored, truly.
Thank you for tuning in to What a Jazz podcast. The episode was created together with the music of Dimitrio Papa, the visuals of Linda Vilnishkita, and the support from the Swinging Europe Network project. You can follow our updates and the new episodes on What a Jazz Facebook page. Take care, goodbye, and until next time.